the question.
You're making
this is
for the record.
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 For the record, y'all.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to For the Record. Thanks for joining us yet again. This is episode 71 of your weekly music podcast. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode where I subjected my co-host Zach Buggy to some of the best songs ever, and he had to run the rule over them and see whether he liked them or not in a catchily titled banger or clanger. I haven't introduced myself, have I? My name is Sean Tierney. His name is Zach Buggy. And this week,
hi, Sean.
He's going to be doing the same to me. And it's going to be weird for me because we're going to be flipping roles a little bit, and he's going to be the host. He's going to be the MC.
I'm going to be the top.
30 seconds in and we've gone there already. Yeah, how you been, my man?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How you getting on?
Can't complain. All is good. Might have had a couple too many drinks last night than what I had intended to, but other than that, can't complain because that's all self-inflicted, so not anyone else's issue.
My missus is away, so I've got the house to myself. So like a reckless 31-year-old, I fell asleep on the couch binging South Park and woke up with my cat on top of me wanting food at 6 in the morning.
You're fucking crazy, boy.
Wild shit going down here. And after I finish recording with you, I'm going to go and clean the kitchen and hoover the place and watch more South Park and maybe listen to some records. It's off the fucking chain up in here, man.
What the fuck? How do you contain yourself?
I know, man. It's just so much swag for one person. I must be honest, though. I've kind of missed the assignment a little here. I didn't realize I was meant to pick the best songs of all time.
I just said that some of the songs that I picked were the best songs of all time.
Oh yeah, I did too. But then I also picked tunes that were just like, you know, tunes from our past that like kind of you asked me that I'm kind of like, come on.
Okay.
I'm
super interested, like, because I have no idea where you're going to go with it.
Okay. Should we get stuck in?
Yeah, man. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
All right. Let's do this.
This first one is going to be an indicator of how scared I should be.
Number one on my list. I haven't done any Spotify lookups. So do you want to look up the Spotifys in real time to get the million counts?
Sure.
Oh, you can. Class. Nice. Yeah. One. So number one, top of my list. Modern Day Warrior, Mean Mean Stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, Mean Mean Ride. Tom Sawyer by Rush. The greatest prog rock song of all time ever.
That's an interesting one. That is an interesting one. That's not at all where I expected you to go with your picks. Rush or a band I have no real relationship with at all. But, and there is a reason why, and that reason is Paul Rudd and Jason Segel. I love Tom Sawyer. Tom Sawyer is a banger, man. It's a fucking absolute tune. And with 291 million plays, it seems like the people at large would echo that sentiment. But yeah, in general, Rush are a band I don't even know. Would I know like five other Rush songs? I might know them without knowing them. But Tom Sawyer is an absolute banger. Total banger. Yeah.
I'm not going to front like I'm this huge Rush aficionado. I literally saw them in I Love You Man and was like, those two tunes, Tom Sawyer and Limelight, are bangers. Yeah. And then they popped up in another film I saw that same year. So I literally went and downloaded that album and then downloaded like two other albums and kind of did a Wikipedia scan. So I know, like, I've listened to the three most popular albums and I know about the band. But like,
I definitely listened to that one, Moving Pictures.
That's the album. That's the one with most of the bangers on it. Like, but Tom Sawyer is
one
just,
I listened that's to. The, oh, 2112
is great.
But that's
a great record.
That's a very surface level. Well, Tom Sawyer, undisputed, huge banger.
It's the Enter Sandman of prog rock.
It absolutely is. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. Yeah, great pick. Yeah.
At number two.
Yeah, let's go.
Daft Punk, Digital Love.
Okay. Daft Punk, particularly from that era, I am all about. Like, all about. I think that, Discovery is... Discovery is, like, to my mind, an absolute classic album. I don't know. I'm sure you'd probably agree. But
100%.
Yeah, I think Discovery is amazing. And Digital Love is... I mean, what do you even say about Digital Love that no one is, you know?
It's my favorite punk song. That's why I had picked that one.
Really? Yeah. I can see that. Like, it's got like that sweet kind of, you know, melody and the auto-tune vocal. It's got a great, like, simple beat. Yeah, it's fucking, man, Digital Love is epic. Such a great song. Absolute banger. Like, no argument at all for me. Like,
yeah, that, I remember that was like, I think that, you know, that would have literally been primary school on the bus, school bus, like, with that on the radio.
Oh man, and that was me, like, backwards red hat, like, drinking the new metal Kool-Aid, like, and then that came on, I was like, excuse me? What the fuck is this? You know? Yeah. Are we allowed to listen to other stuff?
Yeah. Am I allowed to tell my mate who's giving me the Slipknot Metallica CDs that I heard this fucking Kool-Aid tune on the radio, like?
Yeah.
I knew, like, how could you not like Digital Love? It's just a classic.
It'd be really weird for me, like, to be like, nah, Digital Love sucks. Because it doesn't, like, it's such a tune. I'm not going to pretend like I put on, like, fucking
Discovery.
Even that
Discovery. Guitar solo.
Yeah. I don't put on Discovery every week or whatever. But, like, when I do, I'm like, the first run, One More Time, Aerodynamic, Digital Love, and Harder, Better, Faster, Stronger. Like,
it's a scene.
What are you even talking about? Like, it's fucking absolute classic. Whatever genre Daft Punk are, they're the best at it almost. You know, they're fucking amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Digital Love is amazing.
Number three. This is such an obvious one. Like, you asked me a few obvious ones last week.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I could have picked a slightly deeper cut, but I just went with the most, just because I knew I'm going to get a nice reaction out of you, and this is all for fun. Newfound Glory, My Friends Over You.
Oh, man. Like, Newfound Glory, My Friends Over You is one of the songs that I would relate most to my formative musical years. Like, I was obsessed with that song. And I think that My Friends Over You has a claim to be the best pop punk song of all time. It's absolutely incredible. And I say that as someone like who holds, you know, Green Day and Blink and Sum 41 in really high regard. But I think My Friends Over You is, like, in a field of 10 out of 10 pop punk songs, like, that's a 12 or 13 out of 10. Like, it's fucking incredible.
Here, here.
To be honest, like, you could have gone in, you know, on other Newfound Glory stuff, and I would have probably said something similar. But I do think that My Friends Over You, no matter how many times I hear it, man, even from like the riff, the fucking everything, man, it's perfect. It's a perfect piece of pop punk songwriting. And you'd want to be very cold of heart to not like it. I think I love it. I love that song still.
I mean, yeah, that's I ditto.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like, that's one of those tunes that, you know, if I asked Norma, has she ever heard of Newfound Glory, she'd be like, no. But if I put that song on, she knows every fucking word of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, yeah, it's a monster. It is definitely a contender for one of the best pop punk songs of all time. And I'd go so far as to say I probably could have picked any song off of that album, Sticks and Stones. I could have picked Head on Collision or Understatement and nearly had the same reaction. That album is one of the best pop punk albums of all time. Like,
it's so good. And it gave one of your favorite bands their name, The Story So Far.
It did indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, it did. So, to swing the pendulum in another direction, I had this album on fucking CD, you know. Crazy Town Butterfly.
I was wondering if in this series of Banger and Clanger, if Crazy Town would make an appearance. And here they are. Here they are. It's hard to even know at this point. Is it a banger or is it a fucking absolute stinker, you know? Do I like it? No. If it comes on when I've had a few jars, am I singing and rapping every word? Yeah. I mean, it's about as like ubiquitous and undeniable a song as there is, but it's also kind of shit. You know, it's really weird. Like, you remember we were saying last week that, like, I know it's really good, I just don't fucking like it, you know? Or I fucking hate it, you know? But, like, I don't even think Butterfly is good. And I kind of hate it, but I also like it. It's a really weird one. I honestly don't know. I don't know. Is it a banger or is it a clanger? It's kind of simultaneously both, you know?
Every time I hear that, bang, dan, 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 it's like those opening notes distill like the late 90s into like a fucking experience. Yeah. It's like I can smell the fucking bad Brill Cream and I can see the fucking chains hanging from the fucking Dinky's jeans with the flares and fucking, it is the most, and the video, man. It's, but at the same time, like, you know what? It's Crazy Town, that album, I can't even remember the name of it, but that song, Even Alone, Butterfly, what? Is like...
You can't remember The Gift of Game.
The Gift of Game? I remember the terrible artwork that looks like a shit tattoo if you ordered the lollipop, but I got The Gift of Game.
The Gift
fucking
of Game.
Hell, man. Oh, man, there is nothing more assuring than telling people your album does not have game than calling it The Gift of Game. Yeah. But, like, yeah, that fucking, that whole album, but especially that song, is like an example of what happened when, like, it was like scientists in a lab, you know. It was like an experiment of when you take new metal's concepts and aesthetics and mix it with the MTV adverts. Mm. And basically try and meld it into this concoction and see what comes out. And Crazy Town was basically the Brundlefly, the David Cronenbergian monster that came out of it, and was fucking terrible. But that song is undeniably catchy at the same time.
That's the thing. That's what I mean. Like, I don't want to sit in defense about any of these songs, but like, it is like, it's objectively shit, but it's also a fucking banger. Like, it's so hard to parse out. Is it any good? Like, you know?
Is this a banger / clanger? Is this the first one?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it is, yeah.
Okay, we're putting that in the maybe pile. Now, are you ready to move on?
Yeah.
I don't know why this one came to me, but like, you asked me about fucking Donna last week, in all fairness. So, like, if you don't know this song, like, you are, like, fucking, like, where have you been your entire life? So, I mean, there's no doubt. And, like, and if you don't think it's a banger, you're actually maybe kind of soulless as well. Without further ado, Living the Vida Loca by Ricky Martin.
100% banger.
Yeah.
With zero hesitation. Like,
yeah,
straight in there. If I was on the fence for fucking Crazy Town, I am absolutely on the banger side of the fence for Living a Vida Loca. It's unreal, like, for everything about it. Do you know, even the "she makes you take your clothes off", like that pre-chorus is brilliant. Upside inside out, Living a Vida Loca, like. And Noel Gallagher copied it for one of his shit High Flying Bird songs. And like, he spent a career copying the Beatles, which means basically that Ricky Martin is as good as the Beatles. So I don't make the rules. That's just the way it is. Noel Gallagher maths right there for you.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't say Ricky Martin is as good as the Beatles, but
Living La Vida Loca is as good as anything the Beatles ever wrote.
It's as good as anything from the first three Beatles albums. I'll give it that. I will.
It's such a tune. Yeah, it's such a tune.
That's one of those songs that, you know, there's some people who write a one-hit wonder and it's like, God, can you
How
believe
dare
that?
You? She Bangs is an absolute tune as well.
Yeah, it's pretty dope as well. It is. She Bangs is pretty class as well. I've no problem admitting that. Yeah. But like, yeah, those couple of tunes, Ricky Martin still like is allowed to coast on. I don't give a fuck. Because it's like
free pass for life, dude.
You ready for another absolute worldie?
Absolutely.
Smooth by Carlos Santana and Rob Thomas of Matchbox 20.
I'm remembering that song as you said it, you know. I don't really like the this life ain't good enough. I could change my world to lift you up. You know, it's a bit like
my life to be
on board.
It's so small. It's just out in the ocean.
Yeah, you know, it's a bit like. It's a bit like Vedder, you know.
Oh, yeah. Vedder Life.
Vedder Life or Vedder Minus or Dark Vedder or something. Yeah. But like the guitar riff is fucking unbelievable. It's got that like, there's a real sense of cool about the song, you know. I don't really like it though.
Should I have asked you Maria instead?
I love that song. That's a fucking absolutely class tune. But like, I'm not calling it a clanger. You can't, like, you just can't, because it's not. It is a banger, yeah, but it's just not one that I like at really. I think at the time I was just into other stuff and I didn't really get it, so I don't have that nostalgic like pang for it even.
Yeah, you see my dad had that album, I think it's called Supernatural, on CD when I was a kid, so I would have heard those songs in the car and just thought they were absolutely class, like
I can get that, but yeah, it's just not one I have any attachment to at all, really.
That's fair. Is fair. Next one, it's another one that I basically got into through my dad and like actually ended up borrowing the album off him, and now I own the fucking thing on vinyl because it's a classic in my opinion. And I could have gone with one of like the slightly-ish deeper cuts, but I'm going to go with like the most popular song. Mr. Jones, Counting Crows.
So brilliant. So brilliant. I mean, the Counting Crows they're one of those bands that I never liked, and then I went back to them as an adult.
Yeah.
Man, August and Everything After is...
Wow.
It's one of those like perfect records.
People don't know.
People don't know. They think they're the guys from Shrek. Like,
yeah.
Another fucking banger.
Oh, yeah. That's great...
Accidentally In Love is unbelievable. But like...
When I first met my missus, like, and we started going out, and like, I talked about Counting Crows, and she was like, oh, yeah, those lads, the Shrek song and Big Yellow Taxi, they did that cover. And I just told her, listen to August and Everything After. I remember her coming to me being like, what? This is one of the best albums I've ever fucking heard. Like,
it's unbelievable, man.
It's ridiculous, man. It's one of the, it's every song on that is a 10. Like,
yeah. Absolutely no hesitation in me agreeing with you there. That is,
like,
and Mr. Jones is.
It's the reason it's the bleed single. Like.
Spectacular. Like.
Yeah. It's a perfect, like, if I may say it, I think, like, it's a perfect reflection of what you get from the whole album, but in its most accessible form, which is what a lead single should deliver. Mm-hmm. It's the perfect lead single in that regard, I think.
Absolutely, man. It's so good. So good. I think Mr. Jones is undeniable. Like, and for those people who think that the Counting Crows are just, you know, Big Yellow Taxi or the Shrek song, Accidentally in Love, they're so much more than that. But Mr. Jones is both a huge single and a great indication of how brilliant a band they are. And so I think that Mr. Jones really is almost undeniable. And I think with 682.8 million, it's the biggest song you've selected so far, I think.
Also, as a lad who, you know, a big part of your occupation is playing music for promoters and pubs and like covering songs. And anytime I have ever been in any pub in the world and been having a pint and heard who's ever playing the tunes in the bar, as soon as I hear that, I'm like, yart,
class. That's so good.
I never get tired of it. It's fucking tune.
No, it's one of those ones that is, it's probably overplayed, but it's also impossible to overplay something that's so brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Kind of like last week when you bounced Don't Look Back in Anger at Me. That's another one that's overplayed, but like, you're never going to be like, oh, turn that Don't Look Back in Anger off. You're never going to be like, turn Mr. Jones off.
No, you'd be a monster.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's really, just to get a little bit nerdy, it's really kind of clever songwriting as well, because it goes from A minor to the relative major in the chorus. So it's like, it gets that like, Mr. Like, you get this really natural, super authentic, really uplifting lift into the chorus, you know? So it's fucking brilliant. And the Counting Crows, man, are... It's so weird to say this about a band who are so massive, but they're almost underrated. They're that good. And in particular, August and Everything After. They're amazing.
Brilliant. That's I have the exact same sentiments. So I'm very glad I bounced to ask you that.
Yeah.
This next one's a much older tune. Well, not really much older, actually, now that I think about it, because the 90s, just the 90s feels like it's really far away from like the 70s and 80s, but it's not, like, when the way time is moving. But this is, I think, like, I'd be shocked if you don't know this. Horse With No Name by America.
I don't like that song.
What?
Yeah, I don't like it. I know. And your outrage is completely justified. I get it. Yeah, it's... Yeah. I don't know.
I'm shook.
Are you?
Yeah. What the fuck is wrong with you?
I don't know. I've never... I don't know why. I've never, like... It's...
Explain yourself.
It's... I just think it's really repetitive.
It's the beauty of it, man. It's such a simple melody, as they say.
Like, it's kind of... So it's like if, like, Simon and Garfunkel had even less balls. I think it's so... There's something really... I don't know what it is about it. And even
that's
like,
that's a fair description, to be honest.
Do you know the la 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 la? I prefer my laws to be like la 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 la, but it's really like understated, and it's a bit like, yeah, I don't know. It's a bit kind of nothing to me, you know. I don't know why. And like you said, it's a really simple melody. It's got that like delicate little picked, you know, a bit at the start and stuff. And I've never liked it. I've never liked that song. It's just very bland to me. And I realize that, like, people absolutely fucking love that song.
How many plays does it have?
598 million.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, I'm sure I can accept being in the minority on that one, but yeah, it's got this real kind of waifish, kind of hippie-ish vibe that I'm not as gone on. There's no kind of, I like my hippie music to be like the Age of Aquarius, you know, like fucking like, if you're going to do it, go fully into it. Like, you know, it's just a little bit kind of thin or kind of bland or kind of, yeah, there's no fucking, to it. And I've discussed this so many times. I'm a stupid cunt. I'm a moron. Like, I'm such a caveman when it comes to certain things. And when I hear someone go la la la, I just want him to be going la la la. I want to be like the football hooligan, you know. So yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, America, not the country.
Oh, fuck the country.
The band.
in a very, very similar vein to Horse of No Name by America, almost the exact same style.
Oh, no.
Happy by Mudvayne.
Okay, so I hope this doesn't cause ructions.
Oh no.
I think Happy is a bit shit.
Yeah. We're going for so many controversies today.
Yeah, I think Happy's a bit shit. I think that Mudvayne on LD50 and The End of All Things to Come,
that's it,
provided an almost, and it's so weird now in the context of 2023 and Berber Ding, you know, and it's the kind of meme element of Mudvayne. But if you can take that away, which is very hard to do, and transport yourself back to when they were a thing, they were providing like an almost, particularly on The End of All Things to Come, an almost like nu metal answer to Tool, like almost a thinking man's nu metal band a little bit. There was less of the caveman aspect to it. It still had really heavy, down-tuned, bouncy kind of grooves and riffs and stuff. But I think when they did like, yeah, particularly on The End of All Things to Come, like stuff like, you know, Perversion of a Truth and World So Cold, and like they had a kind of almost more esoteric style to them. And I loved it. And even on LD50, which is really like kind of stupid, and it's really hard to separate it now from the Berber Ding Bur, you know, it's really hard. But Dig is, to use the word that I have said so many times, you've started aping it. It's worldly. Like, Dig is amazing, and Internal Primates Forever, and you know, Minus One is off that record as well, isn't it? Yeah. Death Blooms, like, I fucking love those first two records. Now, to get to Happy, when Lost and Found came out, I think that it went towards the phrase I hate, but people know what I mean, butt rock. It went towards a butt rock style. And I think Happy was a real like 3.5 minute wrestle metal thing. And I didn't vibe with it as much because I was so into that more kind of esoteric Tool-ish nu metal sound they were going for on the first two records. So I don't like Happy at all. Although I wonder if I listened to it now, would I be like, oh, this is fucking amazing?
You see, I feel the exact same way about Mudvayne. Like, I love those first two records like so much for the exact same reasons. But I appreciated Lost and Found for what it did differently and what it was trying to do. It's the last good Mudvayne album, in my opinion. I think everything after that is major fall off. And like, there are
self-titled is
shocking.
Terrible.
And the new game is very, very poor. They're like, and all the hell yeah stuff. They completely fell off. Yeah. But Lost and Found has its moments. And I just think Happy's a really cool tune. I think, I get what you mean by the butt rock sentiment, but I also feel like I like that. To me, it's like Mudvayne writing a pop song. And
absolutely.
But it still has the blueprint of Mudvayne in there, and like, it's a bit more subtle, but the bass playing is really cool and nuanced, and the riff and the drums have that like kind of slightly off time, like kind of delivery. And it's very much like Mudvayne repackaged for a really popular Kerrang song, but I feel Mudvayne's soul in there. So I still really like that tune. I do. Mm. But I totally respect your opinion on it too.
It was that record. I just really felt like they'd seen what had happened with Nickelback, you know, and been a little bit like, wouldn't mind a piece of that action. And I think Happy is so direct, and it's so like, it's very streamlined for a Mudvayne song. And again, thinking about Mudvayne now and how kind of comical and meme-ish they are, it's hard to imagine them as this really forward thinking, boundary pushing band within nu metal. And I thought that streamlining and maybe kind of taking away some of the experimentation and going for more straightforward didn't work as well for them as it did for Slipknot, for example, you know. And I think that I never really dug Lost and Found as a record, and as Happy was like, Happy's probably maybe the best song on it from what I remember. Yeah. I could be wrong, but I never really vibed with it. No, and it's a pity because I really hold LD50 and End of All Things in like a really high regard.
Cool. Careless Whisper, George Michael.
You're never going to hear me say anything bad about George Michael. Yeah. I love George Michael. I think that he is the...
He was a pop writing machine.
He was a genius. Like, he was an actual genius. I mean, that documentary that was just on Netflix about him is really, really good. He himself and Andrew... Is it Andrew? It is, yeah. The writing partner. Yeah, they were working on a song, and George went upstairs at like halftime in a football match and came down and had Last Christmas written. What the fuck? Like, you know, an amazing voice. Careless Whisper is just an absolutely iconic song. It's a song that I think survives its memeage, which just happened with the, you know, the iconic saxophone line. And it's an incredible song. Like, it's incredible. And George is incredible.
It's been covered by Rufus Wainwright and Ben Folds, and then it's also been covered by Seether.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
Everybody fucks with it. And no one was like, Seether did a George Michael song. Everyone was like, cool. Yeah, that's a tune. That's a classic.
Yeah, it's like, so good. Yeah. And I just think that I think George is of the celebrity, you know, remember the raft of celebrity deaths in like 2016, wasn't it? George was one of the ones that fucking hit me the hardest, because I just think he's such a sad story. It's so tragic, the way the label fucked him over several times, the way that the shitty, horrible rag newspapers basically made him come out when he didn't want to. Like, just the way he was treated as, like, you know, this kind of pervy kind of, you know, degenerate, when he was actually just a closeted gay man with like issues and like drug problems and drink problems. And like, in an era now of 2023, sorry to get really serious, but it's something I actually feel really passionate about, where everyone is like, oh, we have to look after each other and everything. I just wonder if, you know, some of that attitude had been shown to George Michael at the time, if he'd still be around, genuinely. It's such a sad story. His whole end of his life, I think, is so sad. And I just love him. I love him. He's one of the most iconic and amazing characters in the history of music, in my opinion. And Careless Whisper is like unfuckwittable. Like,
the thing about Careless Whisper is that song has already finished its work, done its due diligence, cemented itself as a 10 out of 10 for all time before you get to the bridge. And then when you get to the tonight the music seems so loud, and he keeps going up, that is obscene. That's like hitting a home run out of the park, but then it starts going up into the fucking stratosphere. At the end,
I'm honestly getting the hairs on the back of my neck standing up even thinking about it, man. It's
that song is just immense, man. It's fun. It's one of the best.
It's one of the best songs ever, you know. And people throw around the phrase genius all the fucking time, and it's so not applicable to the people they're talking about, you know. it's just not, you know. There's only a few true musical geniuses in the world, and for better or for worse, George Michael was one of them. And like, as you said, he's written one of the greatest bangers of all time, and then he throws in that bridge. Get the fuck out. Like, obscene.
So, an equally brilliant song.
Mm.
All Star by Smash Mouth.
fuck.
Somebody once told me that does not instantly put a smile on your face and make you think of about 20 films from the 90s.
It does, man. It does. And it's almost unfortunate how, like, almost, again, memed that song has become. Because it's absolutely brilliant. Like, this, like, All Star is one that I'm like, that's a banger. Like, in a way that, like, you'd almost be embarrassed to say about Butterfly by Crazy Town. You're like, yeah, I like it, but it's also shit. Whereas I think that, like, All Star is one of those songs that was, it was able to, like, capture a zeitgeist. It was so of the time, yet so brilliant that it still manages to endure to now. And, like, to the point where someone like me can get my acoustic guitar and cover it in a pub and people will still go off, because it's, you know, sometimes music is, like, in a way that Careless Whisper is all about craft and songwriting elegance and beauty and, like, true genius. Sometimes music is just about having fun, you know? And it's like I always say about Limp Bizkit, no, they're not the most, you know, amazing band ever. But you put them in a field in front of 80,000 people and they will be the best band that you see that day. That's just how it works. That's what it is, you know. And sometimes songs are like that. And All Star is one of those songs that you put it on and it's so irresistible. As you said, as soon as you hear some, but I mean, let's go, let's go, you know, and it's fucking amazing. I think so. I genuinely think All Star is, you said it jokingly, a song as good as Careless Whisper, but it's actually in terms of, like, genius.
I wasn't joking.
And the impact it's had, it's not a million miles away, like, which is such a ridiculous statement to make. But it, like, All Star has a legacy that very, very, very few songs have. And yeah, for better or for worse, it's fucking brilliant. I love All Star. And that has now become the song with the most plays that we have talked about.
It's surely nearly at a billion.
It's 985 million.
Yeah, I figured nearly. Yeah.
Just under it. And you know what? Like, they're often touted as a one-hit wonder. And yeah, fair enough they are. But Walking Under the Sun is a great song as well. But yeah, I really like Walking Under the Sun. But yeah, All Star, man. I'd be unashamed in my defense of All Star. I think it's a banger. And as, like, there's everything is in there. There's nostalgia in there. There's, like you said, tying it to all these movies and everything. But it's great. The melody is great. The songwriting is great. The construction is great. I think on a technical level, it's very, very good. Yeah, it's great. Great, great, great song.
Here's an Easter egg for you. Do you know the actual particular movie that the song was the official single for, tied into? Even though it's in about five or six movies from back then, there's one movie that it's actually, like, got the cast in the music video and it was the lead tie-in single for. But it's not the movie everyone thinks it is.
I always kind of associate it with Shrek, but that's wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Everyone associates it with Shrek because it's in the first Shrek.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's in Rat Race as well.
But is it in, like, one of the fucking American Pies or something? No?
Surely. Mystery Men.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, proper underrated movie too, man. Ben Stiller, Hank Azaria, William H. Macy, all the boys.
Mystery Men. Yeah, I get you're dead right. I would not have associated with that. No.
Moving swiftly on to a similar enough era, a band, one of the albums we most recently reviewed, Blink-182, one more time. But we're going to go back to the late 90s, but I'm not going to go for the most obvious one.
Okay.
Adam's Song.
Ah, unbelievable. Unbelievable. I think, yeah. Do I have anything, like Adam's Song is one of those ones that you kind of, it's hard to critique.
Yeah.
You know? I love it's so the, sincere. It's so sincere. And it's a moment of, it comes, yeah, just before All the Small Things on Enema. And you're like, you have this kind of, dun, 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 dun. You know, it's like, it's really, like, melodic and yeah, it's fucking brilliant. And, like, it's got a chorus the size of a planet. Like, I think Adam's song is amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yes. You won't hear any argument from me against that. I mean, I think that, yeah, it's got everything. It's got everything you want. And it's kind of in, if I'm not misremembering, it's like the longest song on that record, or one of the longest songs on Enema, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. It must be. It's the slowest.
It's over 4 minutes, and everything else is kind of two and a half. Yeah, there's one that's like 3.5 mutt. But it still breezes along really well, and it's got like really great dynamics. And it's something that I don't think, when Blink are at their best, they don't get enough credit for. Like they really can use dynamism and builds, and they work with, like, obviously an amazing drummer, but we'd say musically quite limited tools with the two other guys.
They'll admit that, like.
Yeah, but they're really, really good at like songcraft and getting you into a place where you're like, oh shit, it's happening, you know. And yeah, I think Adam's song is a really good example of that, and it's a great indicator of, you know, what was to come with the more kind of mature songwriting on the self-titled as well. I think, yeah. Adam's song is amazing.
I think outside of Cacophony off of their first album Cheshire Cat, which is like a very deep cut that only like big fans would know.
I don't even know that. No,
yeah, Cacophony is one of their most underrated songs, and it's like the first, because Cheshire Cat's a very silly juvenile album, yeah. And then Cacophony's the only track that's really kind of slow, and the lyrics are very emotional and dark, and it's a Mark track again. But Adam's song was the first song that really kind of let like the masses know that Blink could write an emo song. They could write a very sincere, sad song that never goes for the tongue-in-cheek humor at all. And then the fact they named it Adam's song after a fan who I think committed suicide or passed away.
Really?
Whose name? Yeah, and Adam was his name. And Mark had written the song but didn't have a title for it, and so titled it that to pay tribute to that fan who passed away.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and I think it's a very, it's a song that goes to a very dark place without ever lyrically needing to. It's a very, you know, it just describes things in a very direct kind of way, where it's like, you know, just wanting to lock yourself in your room and not deal with anybody, and you know, and even that line about spilling apple juice and telling his mom is not its fault, it's not her fault, and it's like, it's a very just direct, without ever going to, it's very just straightforward in it, but that's why it resonates with so many people, because so many people can feel the darkness in it through its just direct, sincere lyricism. Yeah, I think it's, and they played it when I saw them a few weeks ago. That was my third time seeing them, but it was the first time they played it. Nice. And oh man, tore the fucking roof off the place.
Yeah, so of course. Absolutely. Such a tune.
So this next round, this section is, yeah. Okay.
Let's
so,
do it.
Yeah, we're
basically, I must say, man, you've picked some, these have been great, great picks. I'm really, really psyched, man. This is fucking great.
I'm glad you said that now, because okay. This next round is the early to mid noughties Kerrang metal.
I'm probably just going to say I love all of them.
This is the quick fire.
All right, let's do it.
Cards on the table. I admit this round. So the next first one is Trivium, a gunshot to the head of trepidation. The most stupid song title of all fucking time.
Man, absolute like gold-plated, lead-lined banger. Like, it's so great. I mean, that first album, Ascendancy, is like top to bottom. It's one of the, I think it's one of the 2000s best metal releases.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, it really, really is brilliant, and made only more brilliant by their fucking, disgustingly young age. Yeah, fucking amazing. Gunshot is, as you said, like, awful clunky song title, but like,
and cheesy lyrics and really, really fucking out of place. Hey,
yeah.
But the riffs on it and the fucking over the top musical proficiency. It's like a bunch of lads trying to write As I Lay Dying, early As I Lay Dying era metalcore, but all they've ever like fucking practiced to is Metallica and Megadeth and Pantera and shit. So it's like old school thrash metal musicianship played by a young metalcore band. So it has this really unique flavor to it, that record, man.
It does. It's like hugely influenced by, like, you know, black metal and like Scandinavian fucking heavy metal, like At the Gates.
But
it's, but it's got that, you know, the like that's pure like Megadethy Metallica stomp, but it's got like those Scandinavian influences as well. Oh, I love Gunshot. I love all that record. So if you'd said anything off Ascendancy, I'd have been like, yeah, I fucking love it.
Tears Don't Fall by Bullet for My Valentine.
Okay, right. Bullet are a band that I was into at the time. I'll admit it. I hold my hands up. I think The Poison still has some good songs in them, and Tears Don't Fall is the best song on it. Probably the best song they've written. Yeah, look, Tears Don't Fall is a fucking banger. It's super cheesy. Like, lyrically, it's, I mean, woeful. It's
terrible.
It's so bad. But I was at Download 2010, and I saw them sub-headline the second stage, I think. Jesus Christ. Tears Don't Fall was greeted. I saw Rage Against the Machine the same weekend, and, like, Tears Don't Fall was greeted in the same way, like, Killing of the Name of was. It was insane. And it was like, they were one of the bands of the weekend, actually. They were fucking, they were really, really good. Yeah, I really like Tears Don't Fall. You know me, man. I'm a sucker for a huge chorus. And like the chorus is just huge. Your tears don't fall, they crash around me. Like, it's so edgy, and it's so, like, you know, writing poetry under a fucking black bulb and all. Like, it is very much that. But yeah, they had chops, man, and they had a kind of youthful enthusiasm at the time that I thought was really, really cool. And I think it was only, like, Matt getting in their way, basically. Like, the ego kind of took over, and... Yeah, I think what they've become now is, it's kind of a sad story, because they're so bad.
But like, I will admit,
they should have ended up being the band to headline Download. That was the trajectory, and it just
instead last year they headlined 2003s, and half the people who were going to the festival were giving out they were headlining.
I
think everything from Scream Aim Fire, their second album onwards, is fucking terrible. Like, absolutely laughable.
I really liked Fever.
No, hated it all.
I liked Fever.
That self-titled EP and The Poison are really good.
The self-titled EP is great. Hand of Blood, man, is...
Hand of Blood's a banger.
Forwards.
Great. Suffocate Under Words of Sorrow is my favorite song by them. But Tears Don't Fall is the big, big, big classic of that era.
I think... I don't really have an issue with Tears Don't Fall, you know, as a song. I think my issue is more with Bullet as they are now. I love Tears Don't Fall. It's a great song.
Now, this next one, I had the most obvious one written down, and I can use that as a backup if need be, but I'm hoping you are familiar with this other single from the later in their career, which got a lot of play at the time. I just think this is... I remember a lot of people hating this at the time that were into them and into the music we're into, and then a lot of people who would call me a goth came up to me in school and were like, this is a banger, boy. Get Your Hands Off My Girl by Good Charlotte.
I love this song.
Yes!
I love this song.
It's such a tune.
I love it, man. I love it. And I think that that's on the same album as The River, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah.
Man.
I think it is. The album after Lifestyles.
Yeah, oh, man. I love the Get Your Hands Off My Girl. Get Your Hands Off the... I love that.
I got brass knucks hanging from my neck and my chain. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, great song. I'm sure that my reaction to that is tied up in nostalgia a little bit. I'm sure it is. But yeah, I love that song. So good.
Yeah, it's an absolute banger. Okay. This one's a little sadder.
Okay.
And I saw this played live just a couple of weeks ago, and I got very teary-eyed. Roses for the Dead by Funeral for a Friend.
Oh, man. you already know.
I know.
You already know, man. Funeral are one of those bands that you're rarely going to hear your boy say anything bad about. And I think that what they tried to do on ours was grossly misunderstood by people. And
fucking right, yes.
They tried to do something that they wanted to do. And I think Roses for the Dead is an absolutely amazing song. And I think that Funeral, particularly in that period, before they kind of went back to the hardcore-y stuff on like Conduit and everything, but like Casually Dressed, Hours, and Tales They'll Tell Themselves are three completely different records from a really, really young band, and a band that were like totally abandoned by the media. Like the media was all up on their fucking nuts on Casually Dressed, and Juno was all over Kerrang and Scuzz and everything, and they were badly let down when Hours came out, because Hours, I just don't think people understood what they were going for. They wanted to be a rock band as opposed to a post-hardcore band. And I don't think people understood what they were doing. And I thought that the songwriting maturity and class that they show on that, like on that whole album, but like particularly, like Roses is an amazing song. Amazing song.
It's one of those weird ones that like is just a brilliant, brilliant emo post-hardcore catchy song. But at the same time, it's fucking devastating on a lyrical level. It's that It's Not Your Fault hook is just, it resonates with people for such a really, so many reasons. Yeah. It's just brilliant.
I suppose Casually Dressed is probably their best album. And you see, that's the one they're doing the 20th anniversary tour for and all that. I get that. But I think that they really hit an emotional, like, gut punch level throughout, like, Hours. And, like, History to this day makes me fucking well up. Like, you would not believe.
I nearly asked you about History. Full transparency, the full encore after they performed Casually Dressed in full was all Hours and Tales and Tell Themselves songs. So they were really just celebrating that era that night. Beautiful. It was unbelievable. And they did Roses for the Dead, and they finished with History.
I still to this day, when I get to like the arches in your eye, I'm like honestly, that song, man, if you'd asked me about that song, I'd have just like derailed the whole podcast and been like,
History was the original song, and then I changed it to Roses for the Dead, but I was going to ask you History, but I knew you would just be like,
either, man, anything from those first three fucking records is,
a song from a similar era. Billy Talent, Fallen Leaves.
I love Billy Talent, man. I think Billy Talent are that weird thing, right? Where they're super unique and they never get the credit for it. Like,
yes.
They never get the credit for being such a unique and talented and brilliant band. And
they're so weird.
They're so weird. Everyone like, talks about, you know,
it's hardcore, like, and hardcore and fucking alt rock, but it's a bit more absurd, but it can be really dark, and they're fucking, those first two records are ridiculous.
I'd include a lot of the stuff on three as well. I really like three.
I would. Like, three is really good.
You know, Devil on My Shoulder, Rusted from the Rain, all that stuff. But Fallen Leaves, man, is fucking sick. I love Fallen Leaves. I think that the first two records are two of the most underappreciated records from that era. Yeah. First one is 2003. When did the second one come out?
2005, wasn't it?
It was 2005, yeah. 2006. Jesus, I didn't think it was that late. But they're such a funny story, man. Like, how they didn't become the biggest band ever, I don't know. Like, they're so great. And Fallen Leaves is fucking unbelievable.
I wasn't sure how much of a fan you were, so like,
I love Billy Talent, man. Yeah, they're sick. Yeah,
if I was aware, I was going to throw Nothing to Lose or River Below from the first album, which are both just worldly.
To be honest, like, the reaction would have been the same regardless. Yeah. Like, if we're talking about most of the stuff from the first two or the third, I'm like, yeah, two thumbs up for me. Like, yeah, it's all good.
Bang, class. Following from Mr. Billy Talent, we go to Mr. Bill Withers. Who is he and what is he to you?
Bill Withers is a genius.
Yeah.
He's a genius. He's just one of the best songwriters ever.
that song, as well, I just think, you know, it paints toxic masculine jealousy in such subtle, nuanced way, you know, and it is, it plays this neutral kind of ground with it, you know, who is he and what is he to you? That's still Bill album. I mean, that's got Lean On Me on it, Use Me, like that. That's one of those pieces of music that's just like, oh, this belongs in a museum.
Oh, yeah. I mean, most of the stuff that he's ever put his hands on should be in a museum. And I think Who's He is, as you said, it was a really like interesting take on that toxic masculinity style of, you know, the man in the relationship. But yeah, fucking amazing. He had an emotional intelligence that very, very few artists could ever hope to achieve.
So, two left.
Okay.
And from very equally important places in music. The penultimate one, Eleanor Rigby by the Beatles.
I love Eleanor Rigby. It's really strange. It was, when I was really young, I loved the really sharp pop songs, the like 2 minute ones. They were my shit. And then I heard Eleanor Rigby and I was like, this isn't the Beatles. This is the same band. Oh, I hear the Scouse accent. Yeah, it must be. So I've been exposed to the Beatles since I was like a little wee baby. So yeah, I love Eleanor Rigby. I think it's brilliant.
It's I think it's so iconic because it, number one, it's off of Revolver, which is the album after where they kind of started showing their true colors on Rubber Soul. Revolver is where the experimentation really started happening. And to open the album with Taxman, which is like, oh, the Beatles have kind of gotten a bit rockier and groovier, cool. And then go straight into fucking Eleanor Rigby with its esoteric lyrics and haunting orchestration. Yeah. I knew you. Like, how could you fuck with Eleanor Rigby? And to cap this off, a song of equal importance, Foxtrot Uniform Charlie Kilo by the Bloodhound Gang.
Man, the Bloodhound Gang, right? we don't have much time left, so I'm going to keep this rant super short. The Bloodhound Gang are one of the underappreciated stupid geniuses of music.
Yes.
And they have written some abject, terrible shite. But Foxtrot Uniform Charlie Kilo is not one of those. It's a fucking tune. The video is ridiculous. The song itself is ridiculous. The band are ridiculous. But yeah, give me that. Give me that.
A whole pop song of really strange, obscure euphemisms for a penis going into a vagina. And that pre-chorus, the, you know, I don't want to beat around the bush. Foxtrot Uniform Charlie Kilo. Yeah. Fuck. It's so dumb. Parents didn't know what was going on. And we were all like, just like the bad touch. Yeah. No, fucking hefty fine. So I had way too many bangers on it for its own good.
Way too many. And like a song about innuendos of penises going into vagina is the perfect place to leave this fucking insane episode. So thank you for your choices, my man. It's such a laugh. I really enjoyed it. That was great. So thanks a million for everyone for listening. We really appreciate you. As always, you're the best. We fucking love you. This is for the record. The music is the best.
The Bloodhound Gang is the best. Bye.